Alright, time for another DoNotGuide.com video presentation. Okay, this on the subject of the economy, just in a very specific way, as regards to what money is in cash, and an argument against the idea that it's printed by the government, blah blah, that's the problem in this, whatever, the economy, and anyway. It's just an argument opposed to what some people think, how it works. Now, the modern mystic argues that cash is meaningless because it's a digital economy. I'd argue that he doesn't really understand that it's all monetized in such the digital stuff is a cash equivalent. It's still a call on cash, and the transaction is essentially, okay, ultimately conducted in what should be real cash. And so cash is still a real thing. Money is still a real thing in the terms of it. It's still a commodity. And there's a limited amount of it and it has one purpose. Its only purpose is to serve as a universal piece of exchange. So instead of exchanging actual physical things like sheep and goats, instead of bartering with actual substances, you use a universal currency to say essentially the same thing. Here's 5 bags of corn, you give me 7 bags of wheat or whatever. You're just making an exchange for value, and the value is established by the sense that the cash, there's no more gold standard, but the standard is the cash is completely like any other commodity, tied to the value of the other commodities. So if one commodity goes up, then most are likely to go up, blah blah blah. All right, so to stay equal or parallel to the value, so cash is just a commodity, and it happens to be a commodity that's really easy to exchange, and therefore that's why it's used, because it's easy. It's simplified. You can digitize it. But it might as well just say you own 5 bags of corn, or you own, it just might as well be some other commodity, as long as you don't make more of the commodity. So like any commodity, if you make more of it, it has less value. So you have to keep the amount of it controlled. All right. So in the past, I've talked about this. I haven't done it in quite a while, so I might as well do a video like this. So anyway, so the modern mystic knows a lot about the economies. He's done a lot of research, but he just doesn't get this essential argument of what money is. And money is just a note. It's a debt. Money is saying, I promise you some value for this thing that has writing on it. It might as well say you're entitled to 5 ounces of gold or whatever the value would be. I mean, realistically, I guess, okay, the dollar bill should say 0.0001 ounce of gold. Okay, so that it could just say that on it. Same difference. It's exactly what the money represents. It's a promise guaranteed by an authority capable of promising. All right, now. All right, so we'll play his video first, and then I'll draw you the diagram.
You're paying mortgages out in, you know, tens of thousands. You're not using cash money.
All right, so you are using cash money. That's what the Federal Reserve is for. The actual exchange, that is when the check, the money, the digits go from one bank to another bank. That is, you draw on one bank, another bank is the check is written from. There's a transfer between the banks. Okay, so the digits actually have to go from one bank to the other bank, and that's what the Federal Reserve is for. And essentially, it's just a promise on the vault cash in the other bank. So it's just going to be an exchange of, like I said, if it was 100 years ago, they might even pick up an actual physical bag of money and move it from one vault to another. They don't need to do that anymore, but it's effectively the same thing. They're just taking 5 ounces of gold from one bank and putting it in the other bank because the check was cashed. It is a cash transaction. So a mortgage is a cash transaction. They're all cash transactions because they all take place based on the reserves, the money in vaults that the banks claim to have. Like I said, it's all, there's plenty of shenanigans, but I'm saying you can follow the bouncing balls.
Cash money is just another slang expression. Cash is slang. Money is slang.
Okay, and it doesn't matter whether it's slang or not. It actually represents a real function. And the function is, it's a commodity. Again, the first banknotes were just notes signed by the king that says, I have a treasure chest full of gold. Here's a deed to it. You own it. You can come by a year from now and pick it up if you want, okay? But here's the deed to it. You own it, okay? It's the pink slip to the car, all right? That's what the first money was just a way of doing a contract where you didn't have to physically put the money in a carriage and risk a bunch of bandits stealing it, okay? You could be more secure. So you could do transactions without carrying around your treasure chest.
As in, has no actual legal definition.
Okay, so that's just nonsense. Its legal definition is what it legally is, which is a certain amount of printed money that's actually in the economy. And some of the printed money is in a bank vault. Some of it's in circulation, some of it's in my house, some of it's all over the place. But it's real IOUs. It's really guaranteed, government-guaranteed IOUs, and there's only a limited supply of them. Right now, it's around $2.3 trillion, something like that. Not a huge number considering the size of the Earth.
For Federal Reserve notes, or the world equivalent. So that's just to show people that all the transactions that you make in your life, all, are not using the fundamental basic unit, which is the Federal Reserve note.
Yes, it is. So again, that's exactly why the Federal Reserve exists. It wouldn't exist if that wasn't exactly the function. The old function was the banks, you know, had to point a gun at each other and say, give me the damn money, okay? Here's a check I cash from your bank. Give me the money. All right, so it was a little bit sloppy. And so that's why the Federal Reserve was created, is to make sure that these transactions are smooth and there's no disputes and no bullshit going on between the banks. So it just regularized the function of the transfer of these debts by people essentially pawning, you know, their assets. That's what a mortgage is. I mean, all this stuff is basically just saying, you know, collateralize my assets so I can have money to spend.
We don't use the basic unit.
Yes, we do. So again, it's just wrong to say we don't. We're all transacting in that $2 trillion worth of cash in the economy. You always have to use a promise, and that promise is always going to be in the form of one of those bank notes. And that's what's exchanged in the Federal Reserve. So that's probably enough of his statement, and then
so
I'll describe.
When it comes to explaining the euro.
Yeah, well, we're not going to bother with the euro crap. All right, anyway. Okay, so I guess first maybe I'll go find the charts, just so you understand. I don't need the charts. I'll show the charts after, just as evidence of what I'm saying is the truth. Yeah, that's what I'll do. All right, so I'll pause because you need to see what the hell I'm drawing, I guess. All right, this should make it easier. All right, so the system, okay, is pretty simple. So as I pointed out, there's something called the Fed. Okay, and it's just a composite of all the banks. So all the banks are sitting out here, all right. And all of them, their vault is essentially tied to the Fed. So the Fed monitors exactly what's in their vault. So what they have is vault cash, is essentially an account in the Fed. So there's a representation in the Fed for each one of those vaults. And the idea is if you take a check from one bank and cash it at another bank, the exchange is going to happen in the Fed. The Fed's going to take money out of this guy's bank account and put it in this guy's account. So they're all just little charts of money the banks have. certain amount of funds that they are all entitled to in terms of what they have, and that money is exchanged between the banks. And sometimes the banks run out of money, and that's why they borrow money on the short-term interest rates and blah, blah, blah. You hear about that kind of stuff, the bank rate, the rate the banks pay when they don't really want to use their vault cash, because that's going to make them below their reserve requirements, and so they borrow the money essentially so they don't go below their reserve requirements. But those are little minor details. So the idea is there's a certain number of these bills, okay, and that's all there is. So there's a certain number of them, and it's a limited number. It was always a number that's kept limited, okay? So it's progressively rising over time. So it started with 100, let's say, and there's 100,000 of them now. And that's essentially the inflation you've seen over the years. So inflation is pretty much completely dictated by this increase in the number of printed bills in the economy. So the government slowly increases the number by pretty much its own, by defect, okay? Now, the truth is you want there to be inflation, but you want there to be a tiny bit, because you don't want people to ever take, if they're going to stick something inside their mattress, you want them to stick stupid things like gold or silver or some kind of other crap. You don't want them to stick transaction currency, okay, these bills. You don't want people putting cash in their mattress, because that means the cash gets overvalued, all right, and that's inflationary. So you don't want people to store the transaction currency. So if there's a little bit of inflation, that will deter people from putting it in their mattress, because in a year from now, it won't be worth as much. So it's not a great thing to store. It's just a thing to use to buy things and get rid of it, because it's always declining in value by a little bit. So a little bit of inflation is a good idea. All right, anyway. So there's a limited number of this cash. It's used for all the transactions out here and all the simple little stupid ways. Yes, you go to the store, you spend a couple of nickels. Obviously, digitizing hasn't changed anything. Digits are just checks, and the checks are just handled, as I just pointed out. So everything will be transferred in terms of cash, like real commodities, real stuff. Now, the shenanigans they've created relates to markets. So you can understand that the stock market is supposed to be about investing in businesses and all that kind of stuff, and it really doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just a gambling market. And people are gambling with what they have, as, they'll mortgage, say they own a mansion and a yacht, okay? So they got a boat and they got a, and they got a mansion. They'll mortgage those things. That is, they'll put them in the bank, okay, as collateral, and the bank will give them cash. And then they'll buy with the cash stuff on the market, because the stuff on the market is always going up higher than inflation, faster than inflation, so you can just make some quick, easy, free money. So you can turn things that are really degrading in value, that is, it's raining on your mansion and it's, the marbles, acid rain is rotting the marble and the boat is getting leaks in it from barnacles. So, I mean, that stuff's degrading, but you can turn it into profitable stuff by investing in the markets, okay? So that's the racket. Okay, so the banks have a ton of junk that people have mortgaged. And they'll even do things like the government doesn't have enough money, so it'll issue a bond, okay, and pay an interest on it, a premium. So you get money for giving away your stuff, the value of your stuff, giving a deed to the government, so to speak, mortgaging your house to buy a bond, and the bond goes up in value. So it's almost like the market, except it's a kind of a duller for-profit business, is lending money to the government. So people buying the bonds. See, in the old days, they used to have commercials trying to get you to buy bonds and all that kind of stuff, because regular people owned the debt. But now it's just owned by banks. And all they do is they just collateralize it instantly. They buy it for $1 million. Okay, and they just put it in the vault, okay, and just take the cash back out. So it's, it's a loan. It's a collateralized loan. And so it's producing interest. They get a profit for it, and they don't lose any cash value because of it, because they just collateralize it. They just claim it's an asset they own, you know, like a yacht or a mansion. You know, it's good property. It does have value. It's just that it doesn't have guaranteed value. 10 years from now, it might not be worth anything. It could degrade. All right. Well, anyway. So there's a whole economy based on this model of just collateralize what you own. Take everything. It's like if they had a pawn shop where they gave you the real value of the stuff you brought in. So say if you bought a computer for $500 and you take it to the pawn shop, they give you $500 for it. You know, you got the real value of it. All right. And then, you know, lots of people would do that. And if the pawn shop had the deal that, well, you can still use it. Okay. So you can keep the computer at your house, all right, and use it. And no problem. And we'll give you the value of it. Well, so then you're just like, okay, so I can buy everything that way. I can just go to the store, I can buy something, take it to the pawn shop. The pawn shop will give me the real value and let me take it home with me. So I'll pay the store $500, but the pawn shop will give me right back the $500, so I won't have to pay for anything. And so everything I own will be collateralized into cash and into the monetary value. So I can just keep buying hundreds of these bonds, put them in the bank, claim I own them, you know, but I really don't own them because I'm not really paying for them. I'm just using the same money to keep buying more and more computer screens, right? So I could just keep going to the store, buying computer screen, go to the pawn shop, get the $500 back, go to the store, buy another computer screen, take it to the pawn shop, right? I can just keep doing that. And I can effectively own, right, hundreds of computer screens. But frankly, I don't really own them, right? Right? I'm just claiming to own them. And if something goes wrong and computer screens are only worth half as much tomorrow, there's no way I can pay back the loan. That is, there's no way I can undo what I just did. Okay, and so that's when people get into, that's when the market gets into huge trouble, is because a bunch of people have done that, and the assets go down in value, and so all of that falls apart, and there are billions of dollars in debt, and they don't have any way to pay it. They owe the pawn shop, you know, billions of dollars, and they don't have billions of dollars, and so everybody starts going bankrupt. All right, well, that's a whole separate thing from the simple cash argument, so let's not get too distracted. But the trick, okay, in the last crisis, the trick they did, all right, in 2011, they did a really slimy thing. So besides this Federal Reserve, you know, kind of keeping the banks in line, telling the banks you have to have a certain amount of cash in your vault, you can't be way overextended, so doing some regulating, keeping the banks, you know, solvent. They have these other things. So you have FDIC insurance, okay, and you have, that's about it. Yeah, FDIC insurance. I'm trying to think what the other one is called, but it doesn't matter. Okay, and so what the banks did, you know, they had a crisis. All of this stuff in the stock market fell apart because of all the bad debt. So a lot of people collateralized houses. The houses ended up only being worth half as much as the people paid for them. They can't pay the debt, blah, blah, blah. The bank loses a ton of money. So what the bank did was it took all of that stuff and turned it into stocks, okay, and said, here's a stock that's worth absolutely nothing. Okay, it's a piece of dead paper. It claims ownership of huge number of assets, but the assets aren't worth anything near what the deeds say they're worth. Okay, and what it did was it took the FDIC insurance fund, okay, and said, we'll guarantee all of this junk. So $7 trillion in garbage was put back on the market as real money. So none of the rich people who owned it went bankrupt because none of them had to realize the real decline. Their stock went way down. Okay, they lost all their money. And the government came in and told them it's all okay. So these are mostly the banksters, okay, and the people doing the banksterring, okay, the rich. And they were given essentially $7 trillion by the federal government, free money, all right? Because this insurance fund can't, you know. So the insurance fund is intended to stop the run on the banks because it's basically telling people, no, it's okay, your money is safe. But it's a fund that has $1 billion in it, let's say, okay? And it's insuring $7 trillion. So obviously, you know, when there's a crisis or a run, there's no way the government can come up with $7 trillion from somewhere. It would have to print the cash. Now, if it prints the cash, inflation goes like this, you know, goes straight up. So it can't print the cash. But if it does, you're not going to get back money that's worth anything. So the FDIC insurance won't mean anything because the money you'll get back, let's say you have $10 and you've insured it with the government, you'll get back 2 pennies. You'll get back effective money that's worth far less than what your money was worth because now $10 doesn't even buy a loaf of bread. So the value of your currency won't be worth anything because the government printed trillions and trillions of dollars worth of it, right? And again, there's only 2 trillion in circulation in the world right now. So there's a limited amount of this currency, making it precious. Okay, it won't be precious if there's $10 trillion in cash and the government just printed the cash. Then the value of the commodity goes way down, okay, and you have this inflation. So this is a disaster. It's not when, it's not if it's going to crash, it's when. As soon as this thing has to be used, this FDIC insurance, as soon as somebody claims the rights to this protection, the whole thing is just revealed to be garbage. The insurance company is already bankrupt, guaranteed. It can't do it. So this was a terrible crime they committed against a mechanism designed to prevent a depression and to prevent a run on the bank and to prevent inflation. They've destroyed it by underfunding it. You couldn't even fund it. There's no way you would fund it. You just can't insure these bad assets. That's crazy. So they basically restored the rich to the rich. You know, so it was a huge bailout of the rich. You know, that's the joke of it. $7 trillion worth of bailout the rich because we can't afford to let the rich go bankrupt because if any of them go bankrupt, they all go bankrupt because they're all financed. They all have their yachts and their mansions in the bank. And all of those assets are only valuable if there's rich people to buy them. If there's no rich people to buy the mansion, then the mansion's not worth what it, you know, the $10 trillion or $1 billion somebody paid for it, $1 million. So, you know, the whole thing starts to just unravel. Now, the other more important trick is what happened inside the Federal Reserve, you know, inside the Reserve Bank. Okay, where it's supposed to be just cash in all of these vaults, right? So the banks are supposed to just have their cash asset equivalent in their reserve accounts. So what the government did, because it needed money desperately, okay, to bail the banks out and to do this shenanigans, and it also couldn't afford to pay its bills, okay, because the economy tanked. So instead of printing cash, it found another trick. And the trick was to just say, okay, Bank A, write a check for one of our bonds. So write a check for $1 trillion and buy one of our U.S. bonds, our debt. And then we'll just have Bank B, okay, we'll end up getting the money, okay, because the bank wrote the check, the guy cashes the check in another bank, right? So the guy who owned the bond gets the $1 trillion. You know, we're just turning into one person just to make it easier. Obviously, nobody's transacting that much money at one time. But anyway, so $1 trillion goes out of Bank A as a check. The owner of the bond gets the cash equivalent from B, because B cashes, okay, the check, and then that gigantic debt goes into the bank, and the bank says, okay, give me the cash, Bank A, give me your $1 trillion. And what the Federal Reserve basically says is, just don't worry about it. We'll put that $1 trillion in your account, and just don't spend it. Okay, so the bank doesn't cash the check. So the key is, it tells the bank, go ahead, buy the bond, and we just won't ever cash the check. So the Federal Reserve used to have, like, all, if you added up all the accounts, there might be $100 billion in all of the reserve accounts, like 20 years ago. And now there's $7 trillion in the reserve accounts. So the banks never wanted to keep a lot of money in the bank vault, right? I mean, if you're a banker, you don't want money in your bank vault. You want to be buying assets. You want to be lending it. You want it to be in use so you can make money on it. You don't make any money on cash in a vault. You only make money by putting the cash into the economy and investing in people paying loans and all of that crap. So obviously banks would want to keep these account numbers as low as possible. And now they have 100%, now they have 100 times more money in these accounts. So these accounts are now like this. Okay, I mean, they're gigantic amounts of money. So, you know, trillions of dollars more money than was in the accounts before, because the accounts used to be real money and now the accounts are just fake money. So this isn't printing cash because it's not in circulation. So that's the key thing. As long as the banks don't lend any of these trillions of dollars, that is, as long as they don't never take it out of the Federal Reserve. So as long as they never take it out of the vault and lend it, it's not in circulation, so it's not printed money by the government. But the fact is, it's still a liability, okay? The fact is they now gave ownership to somebody for something, and that claim still exists. The claim on that, those trillions of dollars still exists in the sense that the bank is liable to pay it, all right? And so it's just a way of the government borrowing money. So it's borrowing money by inflating these account numbers and pretending, okay, that it's going to somehow pay that money back someday. Now, it can never pay it back, because to pay it back, it has to take cash out of the economy, which will, that basically takes commodities, and puts them on the market. It has to pay it back, it would have to issue a bond, because it realistically can't just get the money any other way. It's not doing any work to be able to earn the cash, to be able to get, the money. So it's never going to earn the money, so it has to borrow the money. And if it puts a bond on the market, then the market goes down. So the more commodities on the market, like if somebody finds a bunch of gold tomorrow, that makes the gold price go down. Well, the same thing happens to the market. If you put more stuff on the market, more paintings, more things for people to buy, the net value of all this stuff goes down, the average value, because there's only so much buying pressure. There's only so many buyers, and they only have so much money in their pocket. You put more things on the market, they pay less for each thing they buy. So every time the government issues a bond, it deflates the markets. And that's exactly what would happen if the government ever tries to pay this back. It kind of guarantees that the stock market goes down. So nobody's ever going to pay the money back. So there's $7 trillion in here, and there's no way to pay it back, because you'd have to elect an impossible president, one who promises to crash the markets. Yeah, nobody's going to promise to crash the markets, just like nobody's going to promise to finance the FDIC insurance fund, because that would require you to crash the markets, okay? Because you're going to put a huge number of bonds on the market, okay, and that's going to use up people's spending money, so to speak. But again, part of the argument is that it doesn't matter once you allow the banks to collateralize bonds, okay, and not have to account for them on their balance sheet. Essentially, they can just collateralize an infinite number of bonds. Just like I could, like I said, if the pawn shop gave me the great deal where I could just buy stuff and I get to keep the stuff and they just keep the deed to it, I could just keep buying stuff. All right, anyway, but so that's the real mechanism. So the real crime is that the Federal Reserve now has just a bunch of fake money in it, fake notes that aren't in circulation, never will be. So people say things like, well, the banks have so much money in their reserve accounts. Why aren't they lending that money? Because they can't. Right? It's an agreement with the government never to lend this money, because if they lend the money, it's in circulation, and it's the same thing as they printed it. So they can't allow it to go into circulation, because that would be printed money, and it would mean that instead of $2 trillion in circulation, there'd be $7 trillion in circulation, and that would mean you'd have three times inflation. You know, inflation, would the value of a dollar would be 20 cents instead of a dollar. All right. And then, like I said, this huge, giant, lingering disaster of insuring garbage, you know, to absolute stinking garbage can garbage. I mean, stuff that is actual garbage that the government has guaranteed and said it's not garbage, and guaranteed the owner that you can sell it to us any day you want. It's basically a dead possum or something. It's totally useless. It's just absolute garbage. And so there's a bunch of dead possums, you know, that are, you know, stock certificates, and the government has guaranteed and said, we'll give you $100 for the dead possum. No matter when you bring it in, we'll give you $100. And obviously there's $7 trillion of that crap. How's the government going to pay $7 trillion if people start saying, I want my $100 for the dead possum? So the economy goes down, the rich people need their money. They start selling their dead possums. They could start showing up to the government saying, give me money for this dead possum. You guaranteed the price of it. And the government's not going to have any hope of being able to provide that money. It's just going to say, okay, I'll issue another bond, which drives the price down again. And even more people will sell their dead possum. So there's no way it can ever get paid back. You can't fix this. And so the only hope is going to be is that somebody, you know, the CIA or something already has a plan, you know, to, create a new currency, make sure that the farmers and all the basic infrastructure, the people doing your water treatment, all the basic infrastructure stays in business, keeps doing it. You know, people who work in those industries keep going to work every day because they keep getting paid something real, not garbage dollars, but some kind of new dollar that's actually worth something. So there has to be some idea of transitioning to some new economy where you keep the basics functioning. So you got to keep growing the food. That's the first thing. You got to keep maintaining, the basic infrastructure. So they have to have a plan to do that, some plan that, is going to have to basically say, we got to start over. The rich people aren't rich anymore, and in a sense the poor people won't be poor anymore, but I mean there has to be some way to fairly do it, where the really complicated part is there's people who have played by the rules, they haven't spent their money on the credit card, they haven't bought things on the credit card, they didn't buy their house on debt, they didn't do all that stuff, and they need to be treated as if they did. They can't be treated just as bad as the people who did just buy everything they wanted and didn't care about how much they owed on credit cards. I mean, you can't treat the people who did pay their bills the same way you treat the people who didn't pay their bills, and that's going to be the tricky part. Because there's going to be a war between the rich and the poor, and there's going to be a war between the credit card assholes and the I did it the right way people. So anyway, it's going to be a lot of tension, when the disaster hits, and it's going to have to be you're going to have to be very lucky to have the Roosevelt kind of person to fix all of this mess. Anyway, all right. So I'm just throwing it in. So again, there's no point in me in. I would have predicted that. In the last housing crisis, that would have started the cascade of bankruptcies. But again, they stopped the bankruptcies by basically just saying the banks are too big to fail. That was the rhetoric used. And what they were really saying is there's too many rich people, they're going to become poor people. And when they become poor people, they're going to call in all the people who owe them money. They're going to call in their debts. They're going to ask for the dead possum money. And that's going to drive everyone else bankrupt. So the bankruptcy the run on the bankruptcy court is going to be the future thing analogous to the run on the bank that caused the depression. And so it's not going to be a run on the bank. It's going to be a run on the bankruptcy court. And that's where it's going to be revealed that none of these assets are really owned by anybody. It's all just debt wealth. And it can't be paid because it's all mortgages and it's all guarantees on future, 50 years. We've basically sold the value of somebody's labor 50 years from now. I mean, everybody has collateralized things they can't possibly own and they can't possibly produce. You can't produce the future labor if somebody asks for it now, the value of it. So all of the assets will be shown to be way overvalued. And, just to make the rich richer. And there won't be anything. All the stuff of real value will be gobbled up. And so all this, like food will, and oil, everything that has real value, everybody will want to own it. And all of this bad money will bid up the price of all of those good assets. And, that's going to be the insane inflation that will destroy the function of the economy. But it'll all be based on the fact that we destroyed the meaning of cash by cheating in two ways of where the government starts promising, it making promises it can't keep, insuring crap it can't possibly insure, and cashing checks it doesn't have the money to cash. All right, so that's probably enough. Oh yeah, I should show the, all right, I'll go find the two important little web pages. All right, so here's the currency in circulation chart. I'm going to move that over a little bit. All right, so this is the year 2000. All right, so if you go back, you can see how it, the old game really was. It was a small amount of cash, $200 billion back here in 1985. And now it's up to 2.3. Yeah, it's about 2.3 trillion. So I was pretty much right. So you can see where it jumped up a little bit in the last 2 years. Obama and Trump were clearly guilty of using printing cash to pay bills. So they both combined spent over $2 trillion in fake cash. This is the government actually printing cash. So they did do some cash printing to pay the bills. And then there's this jump in the COVID years. And then now it's trailing off because they know it's inflationary. So they're pulling back some of the cash because there's obviously too much of it. And that's caused looks like this tick up in inflation. So the fact that this line is now flattening, okay, will in fact be an obstacle to the inflation increasing. All right, because clearly this huge jump was really bad, $1 trillion worth of kind of just, printing cash. So that was a really bad little increase there. Oh, I don't have I thought I turned it on. Yeah, I did turn it on. Somehow it's not connected. I don't know why it did that. Why the hell did it do that? It doesn't even have it identified as the right page. So anyway, sorry. So here's the year 2000. Okay. And so you can just see it's kind of a nice progressive line. Now it should be this line. I mean, just kind of a steady, this would have been a better line. Okay, because it just creates the 1% kind of inflation. You just want a little bit of inflation just to keep people from storing cash. Using cash as a piggy bank, putting cash in the piggy, you don't want people keeping cash because then like any commodity, if people start hoarding it, then it goes up in price. So if people hoarded wheat, then the wheat price would go up. If people hoarded oil, the oil price goes up. So you don't want people hoarding cash. All right. You want them to keep buying things with the cash. Okay. Keep the cash active. All right. So we'll go find the other chart. All right, so this is the real giveaway chart. I mean, you know, it's just so obviously ridiculous. Okay, so here's right before the bank crisis, 2008. So this is when they figured out how to do this shenanigans of, you know, we have a crisis, we need a ton of money, let's just steal it from the Federal Reserve, essentially by putting fake money in the reserve accounts. And you can see that the trend is just this ugly, you know, huge amounts of money, just, you know, this is, you know, it's not printed, but it's guaranteeing future printing. There's no way to undo this line. So you're talking about from this mark to this mark, you're talking about $8 trillion. So in the last 20 years, in the last 10 is when it really happened, you're talking about $8 trillion. So this is what the banks would have been doing. Right here was real money. So back in 2004, this was the real cash in the vaults that the banks had. All of this stuff up here, all of that stuff above this little line, that's all uncashed checks. So that's all the Federal Reserve not doing what it's supposed to be doing. That's all just let the banks write checks and don't cash them. So this is all uncashed checks. And all of that is a liability. All those uncashed checks are liabilities the federal government has. If this money is ever needed in the economy, all of this huge amount of money is ever needed because the bank's going bankrupt or some other reason, the person liable for it is the federal government. They're the one who has to come up with that $8 trillion. They owe the banks $8 trillion. So this is $8 trillion of unrecorded debt. So besides the, you know, $30 billion of bond debt the government has, it has this $8 trillion of hidden Federal Reserve debt. This is all just debt. All of this is just debt. So that's how the game changed. This was a responsible, rational system back here. This is completely irrational in the sense that if they ever tried to pay this down, that is, if they tried to cash, you know, actually collect the cash from taxes and pay down this debt, it would drive the markets down. So this is the only thing that's kept the stock market going up, was the fact that this $8 trillion is essentially money that now people have to buy stocks. They wouldn't have all this money if the government didn't borrow it from the banks. And that's the simple truth. This would all have to come out of tax revenue. It would have to come out of people's buying power. So this is $8 trillion of buying power. And what it bought was bonds. And what it bought was crap on the stock market. It kept the stock market afloat. So you can just see the huge, look at this huge increase here. And the stock market had a huge increase. This is the reason. And now it's declining. So that means, whoops, we're paying back some of it, okay? And again, what is it causing? Inflation and a drop in the stock market. Just this tiny little bit paid back, you know, is enough to drive the markets down. Because it's, again, it's taxes that don't go back into the economy. Taxes that don't make the rich richer. All right, it's paying back debt is the last thing the rich want the government to do. Because the debt is what rich people own. And they're making money on it. So that's the irony of it. The rich get richer, the poorer the government gets. The more in debt the government gets, the richer the rich get. So that was always a big lie when the rich, you know, when the Republicans used to complain about deficit spending. They knew it drove markets up. So it was great for the markets. It was more assets for the rich to own. All right. So, yeah, not much to say. But, you know, it speaks for itself. This is why the Federal Reserve doesn't work. And this is what's, this is a problem that can't be fixed. This is a circumstance that's just got doom written all over it. Because, again, there's no way to pay back this $8 trillion without having a sustained recession at minimum. You'd have to have, 10 years of recession to pay this $8 trillion back. And nobody's going to vote for that. And so it's never going to get paid back. And as soon as there's a crisis, as soon as there's enough pressure, people are going to have to say, government, pay me the money you promised. This is all FDIC insured too, in a way. These are Federal Reserve notes. They can't get more guaranteed. So the government's really obligated to produce this cash if required. And the only way they can produce it is to print it. And again, once they print it, then hyperinflation. So we're just the disaster is guaranteed. It's just, again, a matter of when. All right. So enough said. So this has been Do Not God, Google is Evil, video presentation and such. Google's playing the game. It's kind of funny. Google actually borrows money because it can make money on the borrowed money. It can borrow money, buy Google stock, right? Drive its own stock up, and get richer. Yeah. It's just such a racket. All right. So, till the next time and such.